Hi, my name's Courtney Thorpe, and welcome to More Than Just a Mum.
My crew very quickly disappeared. I found it really hard to bond.
Don't go to the gym, just have a sleep.
This episode, we are joined by the lovely Kendall Gilding. Before we kick off into all the nitty-gritty about what's been going on with you, I have a really important question. What makes you more than just a mum?
I always thought becoming a mum would really define me, and I think I was a little worried that after meeting my first little human, it would change everything about me in a really big way, and perhaps I'd lose my existing ambitions and passions.
Live from Brisbane, 7 News with Kendall Gilding.
Good afternoon. Our top stories this
And I was so surprised because I actually didn't. None of the flames went out for my job or my charity work or the other things that I do. It is that saying of my heart got bigger. And she filled a large part of it. But everything else that I love and felt really passionate about still stayed. And that was actually a real relief to me because I didn't want to be defined by just being mum. I'd worked really hard for so many things. So I guess I was really fearful that by nature they'd fall away. And I'm sure if they did, that would have been okay because she would have been the priority. But I guess I was just surprised at how I could still love all of the things.
And that's pretty unheard of from what I'm hearing from people as well, that you actually managed to keep your identity, because it's something that so many mums struggle with, is losing it completely. So I think good on you, because you would have had to have worked really, really hard to be a new mum and still keep Kendall all at the same time.
Definitely. And it, honestly, it doesn't make me better or different to anyone, but I've got girlfriends who have 4 kids and their heart's desire was always they just wanted to be a mum. And I so respect that. And I respect the mothers.
Hardest job in the world, isn't it?
Way harder than I go to work for a break.
The Chase is coming up next, then 7 News at 6. I'm Kendall Gilding. I'll see you tomorrow.
I'm also shocked at like how good of a mum I am. I'm not the best mum. But I guess I always felt a bit like, am I going to be any good at this?
Really?
And I was really worried about that. And it's so funny because when I was pregnant, people would actually say to me all the time, you're already a mum. And it's so true because you're literally walking around with a human already inside
absolutely.
Of you. You're not breastfeeding and wiping nappies up.
Wiping bums, but yeah.
But they're there. And I remember being a bit worried that like, oh, what if I'm a terrible mum? Like, what if it just doesn't come naturally to me? But I guess maybe I worried that because I wear so many hats, would I be so unfocused? And it is, I think we all struggle with, you know, having a device at home and the TV's on and someone wants this from you. And so that really being present, and I worried that I have so many other dreams, how present will I be
for
my baby? My mum had 4 kids and my dad died when I was really little. So she was actually raising us, well, the first 3 of us on her own from when I was 5 years old. And she worked full time. I went to before school care, after school care, vacation care.
Sounds like my life.
And also did home daycare. For our entire life, because she was a single mum, she had to work that hard. And I definitely got a lot of my work ethic from her, but I also, I think in a way, wondered, oh, do I want kids? It looked really hard. So
yeah,
I think
that.
It's all those layers that really, when I was coming to be a mum, I thought, am I going to be any good at it? Will it be natural? And will I just not enjoy it because I always dreamed of this career or whatever? But she is the light of our lives and has been a total joy.
Let's start at the beginning. You have your amazing husband, Tim, who I adore. He is husband goals. And you guys obviously then decided it was time for baby, but you didn't have the easiest journey, did you? Talk me through.
Yeah, Tim and I were the sort of people who we got married quite young. I was 22 when we got married, 21 when we got engaged. And to a lot of people, that was way too young. But we always knew we wanted some time together and just to live our lives and do a bit of travel and, you know, set ourselves up before having kids. And it's funny how you decide on the timeline and then the timeline tells you how it's going to work. And we'd been together for 8 years. We'd had plenty of time to just be ourselves. I remember we actually decided to like sit opposite each other and we were like, we're actually going to try for a baby. Like it was a real hallmark moment where we were like, this is actually happening. Like it was very intentional.
What was that conversation?
We'd talked about it a little bit, but I think it was a bit like, let's really do this. And actually, if it happens tonight, amazing.
We're going to celebrate after this conversation.
We could have a human early next year. And then it was also a bit like we were coming to it from a perspective of I knew my mum had had endometriosis and my older sister didn't really know if I did or could, but we just came to it from, okay, if it takes a while, that's okay, but if it's quick, that's okay. And that's always, I think, when you are intentional. Yeah, but you have to have an open mind.
Yeah.
It could go either way. So the conversation was really deliberate, and I think I felt the weight of it a bit more than Tim. Obviously, you have to grow the human. They get to have a great time, and then they just get to wander off for 9 months while you do all the baking. But, you know, we have a pretty strong faith, and we actually sat together and prayed, and we're just like, if this is meant to be, the timing will be perfect. So there wasn't a lot of stress or pressure around it. Yep. And after several months of trying, we were slowly like, okay, maybe we will get some help. And it became pretty obvious because I have a family history of endometriosis, and based on my cycles and things, how they were working, it was pretty obvious I probably had endometriosis too. And the tough thing about that was like it felt like getting on a bullet train that I never got off. And I only know that now in hindsight, but I saw a specialist to have surgery for the endo. And then naturally they're saying to you, well, now your best chance of falling pregnant is straight after
the cleanup.
And so it just became very clinical from a perspective of, well, we shouldn't leave it to chance. Here's your options.
Yeah.
And we instantly started IUIs, which I can never remember what the acronym stands for. Essentially, it's the turkey basting of baby making.
It's the turkey basting method. Yes. Okay, yes.
So there's still the same drugs and needles involved that you would use in IVF and a bit of a similar lead up. But then on the day of one egg chemically dropping through you, you get the sperm and you turkey baste it in there just for accuracy.
So romantic. Mm,
not at all. There's one way to ruin your sex life, ladies.
Do you do that yourself or is that done in a clinic?
It's done in a clinic,
so you're not at home in the bathroom. No. Tim, get on in here.
I wish it. That sounds way more fun. They actually whip up the man's sperm just to increase the chances as well. So they improve the
I've just got the worst visual of whipped cream going on in my head now.
Very foamy, I'm sure.
Yep.
They whip it up and it improves what's called the motility, which is literally which direction they're swimming in, because sperm is often swimming north, swimming in circles, or swimming nowhere. And by whipping it up, it increases the chance of all of them heading north. So then you've literally, I would collect that in a little tube and I'd walk to my doctor's office.
Yeah.
She was only a few doors down. That's why I had to pick it up and I'd give it to her. She'd put it in and it was, I kid you not, they use the same, I mean, it's not a turkey based. The thing they use is one they use on animals.
No way.
So it was like the same one you would use on a horse. And so you see that thing and you're like, that's a little intimidating. And they put it in you and it's just to increase your chances.
Do you still have to go home and...
I was going to say they recommend following up with a nice night, maybe a nice day the next day. And that became surprisingly difficult because nobody was in the mood after all the hormones and the pressure. It's a lot of pressure.
Does it take a toll on your sex life?
Absolutely. Everything becomes so clinical. Mm. It's not about love. It's not about lust. It's not about enjoyment. It becomes a means to an end. It just dampens everything. And healthy sex is such an important part of a relationship. So the second that's starting to dissolve, Tim and I always say when we're struggling to connect, we're like, we need to have sex tonight.
Yep.
Because it just reforms our connection.
It's a reset.
And a lot of things that we've been bickering about, little bickers, just all melt away.
Yeah.
So when you lose that element, it becomes really hard.
Did it take a bit of a toll on your marriage? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Just your connection or?
Yeah. And because then even when you're not ovulating and you're not timed right, you kind of think like, well, let's just have some fun. But it's just still taking the sparkle out of absolutely everything. We did several months of IUIs and they were all unsuccessful. And the most natural progression from there was to do IVF. And
how are you feeling through that? You know, several months of trying, several months of this process, and now you're onto another one. How are you feeling as a woman at this point?
Yeah, pretty defeated. Yeah. I always felt really responsible. I had the endometriosis. You feel responsible and you feel a bit like you're taking a dream away from somebody else or that they have to work extra hard because of your body's deficiencies. Tim was super gracious through that period, and I'm always so grateful for that. But yeah, when you jump from an IUI to IVF, and it just is, as I said, you're on a bullet train. And honestly, that decision was made because of finances. We didn't have private health. We'd paid out of pocket for the endo surgery privately, all of the IUIs privately.
And that's not cheap.
No. So yeah. My doctor said to me, you know, Medicare is a calendar year cycle. It's November. If you want to do IVF, we should do it this month because you'll get the biggest rebate. You've already spent a stack.
You're over the threshold.
So I made a financial decision and I went to my IVF counselling that morning.
How did you feel every time that didn't work?
Every month I'd be there praying that it had worked. And it's like every month I felt my body start to give way. You get all of the symptoms that you think are going to come. I get a headache in the 2-3 days before my period and it'll be really bad. Yeah. And I know, like, it's a sure sign. Coming. So I would get the headache and I'd be like, no, maybe it's a pregnancy hormone shift this time, or I'd get really sore boobs. Yeah. And I'll never forget, there was this one month where we were staying in the city as a bit of a getaway, a bit of a pressure release. So we were staying in the city and I always had to get a blood test to either confirm or deny. And sometimes the blood test was before you started bleeding. Okay. Sometimes it was after and your body was already giving you the answer.
That feels a bit redundant, doesn't it?
That morning, I let Tim sleep in because the clinic opened at 7 a.m. and I thought, it's a Saturday, I'll just go in early and then we can spend the day together because we're in a hotel. And I walked through the city alone on a rainy day. I knew I was bleeding and I could feel myself bleeding that whole walk. And I'm just walking down the street praying like, no, I believe this baby's going to stay in there. And because it had actually been a few days past my period. So okay. I was getting confident that this one had worked. And I thought, no, my period's pretty clockwork and it hasn't turned up. That's amazing. But it was that morning that I had to get the blood test that I knew my body was giving way on me. And it's funny because you still sit in the chair and you give the blood and I'm like, no, it's going to be okay. And I couldn't get the results till the Monday.
Yeah.
But over the following 24 hours, my body proved me the answer that I already knew was coming on the Monday morning. And it's just so hard because there's always a 2-week wait from having the IUI to knowing the answer. And every single time, I've never hated my period more.
In that time, were you secretly sort of getting ready for baby? Were you looking at baby clothes? Were you figuring out what the nursery is going to look like? Like, are you planning?
I literally thought that first night when we sat opposite each other and made a decision, I was like, right, 40 weeks from now, that's not really how it works. But I was like, 9 months from now, I want a baby. You know, I had made that decision. Yeah. And in my mind, I was already tracking like July next year. Yep, that'll be perfect. So I was well overdue on the ready factor.
Yeah.
But then as the months wore on, I had to slowly let go of all of that because every month that passed, it was like, okay, now it would be an August baby. Now it would be a this baby, a that baby, and it wouldn't be until a whole nother year later that I would have a baby.
Isn't it funny? We spend our whole early days of relationships and sleeping with people doing anything we can to not get pregnant, and then all of a sudden it's time that we want to, and it's not that easy. Everyone drills into us that, you know, that one time and you're going to fall pregnant and it's this miracle baby and it doesn't bloody happen like that.
All of that safety, all of that stress. Turns out it's actually really hard. There's a few days a month where it can happen.
Yeah, exactly. And you could have just been enjoying it this whole time. No, exactly. No, safe sex. Sex. Was there any moment that you and Tim went, you know what, this is too hard. Maybe we're just not meant to be parents.
I don't think so. I think we always thought no matter how hard the fight, we weren't going to give up. And we hadn't really, in perspective, been trying that long compared to a lot of our friends or family. Tim is actually an IVF baby.
Is he really?
And his parents tried to fall pregnant for 9 years. He's 36 this year, so it's a long time ago. I think the first IVF baby might be 42 this year. So he's still in that early stages where it was a bit frowned upon, a bit prideful for parents back there that they were like, oh no, we would never admit that we needed help. And so they didn't seek out help. But after nearly a decade, his parents were on a waiting list to adopt, and they heard about IVF, and they're the most beautiful, shy, loving people. And I can imagine it was a really tough step for them to decide, like, no, well, let's give this medical option a go.
Yeah.
And they fell pregnant with Tim. So I did have a bit of perspective that they've worked for 9 years to get here. I've got a while before I'll give up on the dream. There was definitely a part of me that thought, well, maybe this is the world deciding for us that we're not going to be parents and we'll be other things.
Yeah.
But I never got to a point that I was ready to give up just yet.
Yeah. So with the IVF, there's a lot of hormones involved with that. How did you cope going through that and still working? And I also have to add, there weren't many people that knew that you were actually going through this. It wasn't until after the fact. I had no idea. And in fact, I recall asking the question you should never ask. And God, I only really learned it after going through pregnancy struggles myself. And I remember saying to you, and I think I asked him too, so guys, when are you having a baby? What's happening? You've been together forever. Come on. And no one knew what you were going through. How did you cope with all that?
That is pure pride. I was so prideful. I didn't want anyone to know that I was failing at this. And so I didn't tell anybody. And it's silly because I have very vivid memories of standing at a race day and I'm there in a white jumpsuit and I had just had endometriosis surgery to the point where I'm still bleeding from the recovery of that. And I just have to pretend everything's okay. And I remember I was still quite bloated and I just worked so hard to suck in all day. Spanks, like it was like whatever it took. And as women, we're always like the second you're having a photo, you pose and you really pull it in.
Absolutely.
But I couldn't really even walk around without like really sucking in and trying to keep it together because I was still so puffy just from the surgery. It was a really, really lonely, lonely journey. And it's my own fault. It was all pride. We did do IVF that month and we ended up with 8 embryos, which was incredible.
That's amazing.
I got 20 eggs. Oh, 8 of them formed fully day 5 blastocyst embryos and were able to freeze them. And I had one transferred in the December and that was Olive. Day of transfer, the scientist said to us, we pulled an embryo out and it actually didn't defrost properly. It needs to sort of expand.
Right.
And he's like, but it's all good. We pulled another one out and it did the right thing. And we were like, oh, but that was a baby.
Yeah.
And we really grieved this one embryo because to us it was still like, well, that could have been
a child,
the one.
The one.
And you have to trust the process and believe that it wasn't your particular one. And every month we are dropping eggs that don't become humans.
Yep.
So we just had to trust that process. But it kind of made the pregnancy of Olive even more sweet because you just thought, well, you are the person the world needs right now. And so I had that one embryo transferred and it was successful and best phone call of my life.
It was on Tim's birthday. Oh, stop. That was going to be my next question. When, how, what did you feel? Relive it for me.
It was the 20th of December and Tim's a teacher, so he was already on school holiday. So he was out playing golf. And I actually got the phone call from my obstetrician in the makeup chair. So I'm there having my hair done and my obstetrician's like, well, congratulations, you're pregnant. And I just couldn't believe it. And I could have just melted and cried. But I'm there with someone I don't want to know what's going on. And so I just was really like, okay, thank you very much for that. Yep, I'll see you soon. Bye. And just had to sit there really reserved. It was awful. And I regret not just being like, stuff it. I should just tell her what's going on. It's real. Like, I'm actually pregnant.
Did you enjoy those yucky first trimester pregnancy?
No,
not even a little bit more. You just don't. They're just rubbish, aren't they? Yeah, no.
We went on a holiday to Tasmania and every time I'd be sick and sometimes I'd be in the fetal position and I couldn't get out of bed.
Aww.
And Tim would just stand over me and be like, this is awesome. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he's like, if you're this sick, the pregnancy's going really well.
He's getting thrills out of you struggling.
It was awful. I've never been so mad. But I bled a lot in my first trimester. A lot.
You bled a lot?
Massive, massive bleeds.
Right. That must have been so stressful given what you'd been through.
And given what we've discussed with miscarriage, I genuinely on multiple occasions throughout that time thought, okay, well, obviously I've actually just passed the baby through into the toilet because they would be such big quantities. So on our holiday in Tasmania, I did end up in the Hobart Hospital begging them to do an internal ultrasound. It was so early on, maybe 6 weeks. And then the same thing happened once we got back from the holiday. Same massive blood loss. I just was like, Tim, you need to come here. And we're trying to fish things out of the toilet. Apologies. It's gruesome, but this is the reality.
It's the reality of it, yeah.
And we're holding things going, well, is that a baby? Like, we don't know. And I've gone back to the hospital. So I went to the Royal. Same thing. We just waited and waited until someone would do a scan. And they did.
Yeah.
And the lady at the Royal was like, I'm just going to get a second opinion. And I was like, oh, that doesn't sound good. And you're there for hours. And then she's finally like, yeah, no, okay, so this is your baby and you can see the heart flicker there and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay.
So any explanation for this bleeding or?
I saw three obstetricians in that period and the truth is none of them had an answer. And I find it amazing how much IVF's become a part of my life and my friend group and the people around me. Of my immediate circle of five girlfriends, four of us have done IVF, but all for very different reasons.
Right.
Some people for career because they were getting older, other people to remove genetic disorders, other people because the husband has sperm issues, you know, me for my personal endometriosis. Yeah. So we've all got a different story. But bleeding in the first trimester is a huge issue and no one's talking about it. If you Google bleeding and pregnancy, I mean, never Google anything, guys. Dr. Google
Dr. Google,
not
no,
good.
Not the answer.
Everything will tell you you're miscarrying. There is no glimmer of hope on the internet.
Yeah, right.
But I think it's just a hormone shift that your body wasn't prepared for, and it just doesn't seem to be something people are talking about.
Well, I had no idea. I had never. Here I am going, yeah, that's a bad sign.
Yeah,
that's all I know of bleeding when you're pregnant. That's a bad sign.
I'm on a mission to normalize it and have people know that it's not all doom and gloom because
good on you.
The feeling of it's out of your control. What will be. You can't stop a miscarriage if that is happening.
Yeah.
But the feeling of it's an inevitability because I've started bleeding is actually not true. It's funny because it's similar to a period as well where it builds up. So some days I'd be working and I'd literally, when some of the days I was in Sydney, I'd be like, Tim, I actually need you to bring me some spare underwear to Sunrise. Like, can you meet me at Martin Place? Because I've found myself in the bathroom in a position I wasn't expecting. And that would be super alarming, but I'd just try and calm myself and be like, it's okay, it's not much. But there were two specific incidents where I've gotten out of bed, gone to the toilet, and the volume of what's gone through me was literal full palm size chunks.
Like clots. You were clotting.
Massive blood clots. And I just burst into tears. It's so much blood that you don't know whether to stand up or stay there forever because when's it going to end? And particularly the time in Brisbane because it was the second time it happened, I was like, Tim, I know you don't – Tim does not have a good stomach. He will gag still to this day, like changing Olive's nappy. And
oh, God, Tim.
It's a terrible reflex. But I'm like – I need you to come here. And he would always just man up, but I was like, get gloves. And he put on rubber gloves. And I still to this day have a photo of what he has fished out of a toilet bowl for me.
Wow.
Because I was like, I need to know, is this it? Is it over? And, you know, what's in there? And we're going, oh, do we put it in a Snaplock bag and take it to the hospital? Are they going to know? Like, is it helpful? Or do we just take a photo?
Do you just flush it back down the toilet?
Exactly.
Like, what do you do and, in that situation? Because that could be your baby.
And do we get in the car? Do we go to the hospital? Are we going to waste 8 hours there? Like, what do we do? And every single time that we were sitting in hospital, and bless the fact that Australia at least has free healthcare, but sitting there for 8 hours on a bed in a gown like a patient, every single time Tim and I prepared ourselves that we had lost the baby. And so we would just sit there holding each other's hand and we'd go through phases of just crying and then being okay and just talking, and Tim would try and read a book, and then he'd look at me and I'd be weeping again and we'd cry together. And because every time it just felt like, okay, like we're here for the inevitability of being told the baby's gone.
Yeah.
And you've built up a bit of a dream in your heart and you know the date that it would be coming. So
you've seen the heartbeat by this stage.
We'd spend 8 hours shifting our focus to it's not happening for us, and we'd just weep for that loss. So then it would make it extremely bizarre when they were like, here's your baby, and it's flickering. And we're like, huh? Really bad whiplash from that. And then being sent home really quickly after 8 hours of complete grief. Yeah. Complete grief. Completely planning the journey's over.
You've had baby. You did it. You got through a pregnancy, which is never an easy feat for any woman. I don't care what they say. And then you actually ended up going back to work relatively early, didn't you?
I'd made a plan that I wanted 6 months off, and my husband really wanted to take time off. So we were always going to tag team.
Okay.
And he was always then going to stop work and take 6 months off as well.
So he worked that first 6 months that you had off.
He did.
You went back in the February. And then Tim became stay-at-home dad.
Yeah. And instead of taking 6 months off, he ended up taking 8 months off.
Wow. Was it all for you to return to work, or was it because Tim wanted to be have that experience of being at home? What was sort of the decision between you guys?
It was definitely for me to go back to work, but he really did actually want to have that same experience that I got of not going to work every day and hanging out with this human.
Bonding with your daughter, yeah.
And it was a great dynamic because they really need you as mum, particularly in the first 6 months, because you're breastfeeding so frequently. Mm-hmm. But then by the time she's 6 months old, there's a lot more personality. There's some different things happening. And it was kind of a natural time for him to take over. It was not easy. I'm still breastfeeding. Not now.
Oh, okay, good.
She's
at that
two and a half, guys. I'm not.
I was going to say good on you. God, you pushed through. So at that stage, when you went back to work, you were still breastfeeding.
So there would be a feed that happened right before I went to work. There would be an express that I would do midway through my shift. And then I would basically get home and breastfeed Olive for dinner. So that became a real challenge. And anyone that's used a pump would know all about, you know, how fun it is trying to hold them onto your boobs. And
no, you got to get the bra. Did you not get the bra?
I didn't get the bra. I was like, is this a gimmick from Hollywood movies?
It was my best friend.
I'm going to be more organized next time. But then you've got to store the milk and you're going, so I've got it in the bottles, but do I put it in the pouches? And, you know, it's, and then it was like, well, do I take my pump home at night? Do I leave it at work? Do I buy two pumps to make my life easier?
I have to say, I agree with you in that you're very logistical and that
listen to me plan. Yes, it's like listen a military to plan. Operation.
But logistics aside, emotionally, how was it for you returning to work after the journey that you'd been through to get this little love? She's 6 months old, she's still a baby, and you returned to work. How did you emotionally feel?
I'm obviously still emotional. Yeah, it's tough because you never get those moments back.
Yeah.
And I can't have that time back with her. But I guess I feel super grateful that it was Tim and work was so accommodating. So she had massive day sleep still at that time. So I would usually leave while she was asleep. I would know she'd be asleep for 2 hours of the time I'm gone. And then by the time she wakes up, there are a few things her and Tim would do together, and then it wouldn't be long after that I would come home.
So that was how you sort of justified it in your mind, that there's not that many wake hours
that I'm missing,
you're missing out on.
And it wasn't like I was putting her in daycare from 6 months old and the pressure of, well, I'm paying a fortune for it, so I should put her in for big days.
Yeah.
It was like, no, I'm leaving on my terms and with a person I trust, and I'm just going to slip out to work. And I still loved my job, and it felt really invigorating to get back and do what I loved to do. But, I mean, I cried many, many, many drives to work. And that still exists today, but in different ways.
I'm sitting here watching you well up. So there's obviously still that raw emotion over that time. Do you regret it? Did you go back to work too soon?
I don't regret it, but I guess I'm pregnant now and I'm planning that journey again.
Yeah.
And as you say, I'm a logistical planning type A control freak. So when things don't work out how my brain has planned them, it shocks me. But I guess I'm planning for that experience again. And I'm, again, planning 6 months off. And my husband would like to take 6 months off again. Yeah. So sort of the same mold. And I guess in a way I'm afraid because their little years are so crucial and they are so hands-on. And what I've actually found surprising is that Olive has probably needed me more in the last 6 months as a two-year-old.
I agree with that.
Than she did as a six-month-old.
Definitely.
But they change and develop so much when they're a six-month-old, so you don't want to miss those moments, and there's just a lot going on. But in terms of them actually needing a parent, the last 6 months have been so hard on me because I've been like, she really needs me I'm not there.
Right.
And I guess I'm just preparing myself to go through all of that again.
Yeah.
And you want to make the best decisions for your family. And at the end of the day, the job, the money, the house, the everything else doesn't matter. It's the connections and the humans and the relationships that count. And it's just a juggle between the two versions of Kendall. I'm a real equalist, so it was such a beautiful pairing for me that it was like, oh, look, we're both going to do exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And it meant that he actually took the federal government paid parental leave, not me. I took leave from Channel 7, I went back to work, and he took the federal government leave. So it was a real exercise for us in showing others as well what it can look like when you do things equally. I am not the only parent in this relationship.
He's not babysitting his children.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how many girlfriends I've been out with lately who are like, oh, dad's babysitting tonight. I was like, don't you dare.
No.
It is not babysitting. No. But I wouldn't say it is natural for men to want to do that. Their natural position is provider, protector.
Breadwinner. That's
breadwinning.
What their role is. Yeah.
Forms a huge part of their identity.
Yeah.
And so to shift away from that is no small feat, but he did it with grace. And I think honestly, sometimes like I'm really looking forward to having 6 months off. I'm really looking forward to stepping back. And to be honest, I think sometimes they do too. It's like, in what world would I ever get a 6 month pause from my job? So he just looked at all the positives.
How long ago did you decide to give beautiful little Olive a sibling?
Okay, so we've all established I'm a type A control freak.
I had presumed there would have been a plan around
this. There was
this.
A plan. But then
no surprise babies for Kendall.
We also worked out that I can't control everything. So similarly to the first time, it was very like we would have loved a three-year age gap. We really didn't want two under two or that really crazy. We thought it'd be nice. Olive being a girl too, I knew she'd naturally be quite nurturing and helpful. And we thought like her being out of nappies. And again, I'm just such a planner. It's painful. But then at the same time, it was like, okay, but if we leave it too long, they'll be 4 years apart and
you're
then will that
all
annoy me?
Over again.
So we were really fortunate we still had six embryos frozen. We knew we'd done the hard work and we knew if things didn't kick in themselves, we could resort to that.
Okay.
But we made a bit of a plan. All right, it's July. We'll start trying naturally. If we're not pregnant by the end of the year, I'll seek some help. And when it wasn't working, I thought, no, I'm going to go see a doctor. And I'd talked to a different doctor to the first one.
How long had you been trying?
6 months. Not ages, but I guess I just knew we've done the hard work.
Yeah.
If we need to go to IVF, we'll do it.
Yeah.
And so I made an appointment with the doctor and we had a big chat. He suggested I have a hysteroscopy, a bit of a scrape out of your uterus, just to give myself a bit of a clear surface. And he was like, we can do that. It's an afternoon procedure.
Yeah.
Super easy. And then we can pop an embryo in. And then Christmas came, and for the first time in 10 years of working at Channel 7, I took both Christmas and New Year off. So I took a week off. We went up to Noosa on Christmas Day and for the days following. And guys, I have never been more relaxed. We were drinking wines on the deck overlooking the water and, you know, finishing with Baileys and having great conversations with my family. And when I say relaxed, I think you know what I mean.
I think I know where you're going with that,
Yeah, I usually have a no sex near my family members policy because I like cannot get in the mood. I'm like, yuck, they're in the other room.
They're right there.
No way. Not on this holiday. I was so carefree. I wouldn't be surprised if they heard. And it was a few weeks later that my surgery was approaching and I kind of all of a sudden was like, wait a minute, my period hasn't turned up. All I really, really wanted was to fall pregnant naturally.
Yeah.
That was a real desire of my heart. It's something I had prayed about constantly. And I was just like, God, please, you can do that. It's not hard. I just want to know what it feels like. This is how you designed us to make them. Like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Tim kind of said to me, I think we've got a pregnancy test at home. Why don't you just use it? We had been away again for just a weekend with just the two of us. And I had had a lot of cocktails and red wine. And so I kept thinking, maybe I just don't feel good because I had too many red wines or something. Anyway, I went to the toilet and he's standing at the door counting, which, I mean, he's never done that before, but on this particular one, two, three, and he's like then looking at a clock. And I've sat there on the toilet and I've watched the test turn positive.
Oh, my God.
And so I've walked outside just like eyes full of tears and I'm just like, it's positive.
Well, I'm so, so thrilled. And honestly, everything you've been through just is so inspiring. The way that you fought through to start your family, the way that you still hung into your identity and clung to that. And I think that's a really, really huge thing for mums to remember, that all this pressure on us that we are supposed to give up who we are to become a mum. And you are the perfect example that no, you don't. You can be a wonderful mother and still be you at the same time. So thank you so, so much for coming in and sharing your beautiful journey, and good luck with baby number
two.
Thank you.
I do want people to know, though, it's not pretty all the time. It's not perfect and it gets ugly. So it's just a case of prioritizing what matters to you. There's still days where I will cry because I'm not with Olive, and I'll feel suffocating pressure because I've given up an opportunity at work and someone else has been given it. So you just ride the waves of those moments, and
you got to fight, right?
Yeah.
You got to, as a mum, that's, I think, all we ever do is fight. Fight for our babies, fight for our families, fight for ourselves.
The juggle is real.
In the next episode of More Than Just a Mum, we'll be talking to Breakfast Radio host Emily Jade O'Keefe, and we'll be talking separation and divorce with children.